This is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, the 2nd of November, 2006. From Pacifica Station, KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado. Two separate agencies open investigations into the silencing of government scientists on global warming. Guatemala and Venezuela settle on Panama as the consensus candidate for the UN Security Council seat. And it's Day of the Dead. We'll hear how some are remembering migrants that have lost their lives on the border. Those stories and more, but first, these headlines.
I'm Sandra Lupien with the Free Speech Radio News headlines. The Israeli army killed 13 Palestinians and wounded scores of others during the last 24 hours in what is its largest attack on the northern Gaza Strip city of Beit Hanun since June 27th. Rami Al-Maghari reports from Gaza.
Palestinian medical sources reported today that Israeli army fire killed five Palestinian residents and wounded 15 others, including women and children. The town has been under an Israeli military-imposed curfew since yesterday. Eyewitness Fadin Suhwail told Afas Oran that the Israeli army has tightened its siege of the city.
The Nasser Mosque is now besieged. As there are a number of killed inside, there are also resistance fighters in the mosque. There has been a warning to shell or storm the mosque, whilst dozens of local women have protested peacefully.
The Israeli government claims its military offensive in Beit Hanun is aimed at preventing armed Palestinian groups opposed to the Israeli occupation of firing of homemade rockets on nearby Israeli towns. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas called the attack a massacre. From IMEMC, for Afas Oran, I am Rami Al-Maghari, reporting from Gaza.
Syria and Iran are denying Bush administration accusations that they are pursuing the overthrow of the Lebanese government. Kat Aaron has more.
The White House said Wednesday that it is concerned about what it called mounting evidence that the two nations are collaborating with the Lebanon-based Hezbollah resistance group to oust the government of Fuad Sanura, which has the support of the United States. Syria, Iran, and Hezbollah deny the charges, and Syria is demanding that the U.S. make public any evidence it has of its alleged involvement in efforts to take down the Sanura administration. White House spokesperson Tony Snow said it serves what he called an important diplomatic purpose to keep the information classified. When a reporter suggested the administration's charges were weighty enough to require at least some characterization of the evidence, here's how Snow responded.
No, but thanks for the advice.
The allegations came a day after Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah demanded that Prime Minister Sanura form a unity government or face protests seeking a new election. Nasrallah has given a deadline of mid-November. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Kat Aaron in New York.
Seven retired federal judges have joined dozens of people held at Guantanamo Bay Prison in filing a brief urging an appeals court to declare unconstitutional key parts of President Bush's new so-called anti-terrorism law. The law strips people held on suspicion of terrorism of their right to habeas corpus. Three of the judges who filed the brief were appointed by Republican presidents. A soldier who fled to Canada rather than return to Iraq has disappeared again. This time, Private Kyle Snyder disappeared just a day after surrendering to the military. Snyder said he went AWOL for a second time after military officials said he'd be sent back to his unit rather than be discharged. Peru's President Alan Garcia announced that he'll have Congress consider applying the death penalty to punish those convicted of terrorism. Garcia wants Congress to convert an existing constitutional article against treason into a civil code against terrorism. The move comes after recent rumors of a possible resurgence of Shining Path members in universities and unions. Meanwhile, the Peruvian chapter of Amnesty International is criticizing a new law proposed by Congress members who support Peru's former president, Alberto Fujimori. Amnesty says the proposed law, which would intervene in the activities of non-governmental organizations, would be terrible for Peruvian society. Pamela Cueva reports.
The Peruvian Agency of International Cooperation, APSI, a government agency, is proposing a law that would require all NGOs to register their activities with Peru's central government. The president of Peru's Consumer Defense Commission, Johnny Lescano, cautioned President Garcia that the application of this law could signal the start of an authoritarian government. And there's been outcry from different sectors of Peruvian society that the law would give too much control over NGOs to the government. An Amnesty International spokesperson said that the agencies of international cooperation finance projects with high restrictions, They demand more stringent reporting than is now required of NGOs. In Peru, NGOs make important contribution in society by developing programs and addressing issues where the government is absent. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Pamela Cueva with Alfredo Cuadros.
Colombia's government is rushing troops to an area near the Caribbean coast after the latest in a string of attacks by members of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, known as the FARC, which have shaken public confidence in the government's hardline military strategy for the nation's civil war. Mike Cesar reports from Bogota.
The attack yesterday morning killed 2 civilians and 17 soldiers and police officers. Fighters attacked the town of Tierra Adentro, about 200 miles northwest of Bogota, Colombia's capital, then retreated back into the hills. The guerrillas have been fighting a 4-decade civil war to overthrow Colombia's elected government. Yesterday's attack follows 2 recent bombings, one in a military university in Bogota. The surge in attacks has raised new doubts about Colombian President Álvaro Uribe's policy of defeating the guerrillas through a military offensive, which is largely financed by the U.S. government. In recent days, the FARC also attacked electricity transmission lines in North Santander department on the Venezuelan border, knocking out power for thousands of people. Also in North Santander, some 60 local officials have resigned this year because of guerrilla death threats. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Mike Cesar.
2 foreign oil workers from Britain and the United States are missing from Nigeria's Niger Delta region. Samalukoya reports from Lagos.
Armed men abducted the 2 foreign oil workers early this morning from an oil ship operated by the Norwegian company Petroleum Geoservices. No group has claimed responsibility. There are numerous armed groups operating in the Niger Delta. In recent months, the groups have stepped up attacks on oil installations and kidnapped about 40 foreign oil workers. The armed groups want local communities to have a share of oil proceeds. Billions of dollars made yearly from oil sales in the region is shared mainly between the Nigerian government and Western oil companies. Though the oil industry has been active for more than 4 decades in the Niger Delta, local communities which derive little benefit from the industry remain very poor. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
And I'm Sandra Lupien for Free Speech Radio News.
Mexico's federal preventive police continue to carry out actions to quell the popular rebellion in the southern state of Oaxaca. After breaking up the main barricade on the superhighway that enters Oaxaca City from Mexico City yesterday and taking over the occupied facilities of the state-run TV and radio station, federal troops with helicopters and armored vehicles have now surrounded the campus of the state university. Members of the popular movement demanding the ouster of Oaxaca's governor have barricaded themselves inside the university's radio station. FSRN's Shannon Young and Vladimir Flores report from Oaxaca City.
This morning, the militarized federal police force known as the PFP, along with shock groups associated with the ruling PRI party, surrounded the campus of the Benito Juarez Autonomous University of Oaxaca, where dissident students and faculty have been broadcasting from the university's radio station.
Pero no permitamos que avancen más y menos hacia Radio Universidad.
We're not going to permit them to advance towards Radio Universidad. We know that they're going to do the dirty work to open the way for the paramilitaries, which just moments ago shot at our friends as we were on our way in here.
Thousands of Oaxaca City's residents rushed to the scene in response to appeals for help sent out over the airwaves. The PFP responded with beatings, tear gas, and water cannons. FSRN has received numerous reports of arrests and serious head injuries. As of deadline, the police operation was still underway. Again, an excerpt of today's broadcast on the university radio station.
Continúa sobrevolando por los aires el campus de Ciudad Universitaria.
The helicopters keep flying over the airspace of the university campus. They keep trying to intimidate us. They continue to violently attack the people of Oaxaca and our compañeros from the university. We condemn these acts and repeat once again that Vicente Fox is responsible for the red stain on our Oaxaca. At the same time, we say to Felipe Calderon that if Ulises Ruiz doesn't leave the state's governor's office, that he will never become the president of our country. So we are making a call at the national level for a massive mobilization to prevent that despot Felipe Calderon from positioning himself in the presidency of our country.
Today's operation comes after police yesterday took over 2 key positions held by the movement demanding the resignation of Governor Ulises Ruiz. The PFP dismantled the huge barricade and encampment blockading the superhighway from Mexico City and took over the studios of Corte B, the state-run television and radio station, which was taken over by a large group of women on August 1st. This teacher spoke to Indy Media Oaxaca shortly after the operation at Corte B, also referred to locally as Channel 9.
Encontraron unos compañeros que no pusieron ninguna resistencia para el retiro de las barricadas. Sin embargo, arbitrariamente...
The police found some of our friends who did not resist the withdrawal of the barricades. Nonetheless, they were beaten and arbitrarily loaded onto a truck and moved to a location that, up until now, we don't know. There are five compañeros. We still don't know their names, and we're trying to figure out who they are exactly. But we know that they live around here. Just afterwards, here in Channel 9, a helicopter landed and took away the detainees. A lot of people. We don't know the exact number. We know that some were taken to the state attorney general's office, and we know that among them was a 13-year-old boy.
Meanwhile, 17 teachers and members of the Popular Assembly of the People of Oaxaca are 2.5 weeks into a hunger strike in Mexico City. 4 of the original 21 hunger strikers have since been hospitalized. Yesterday, a Zapatista delegation visited the hunger strikers in Mexico City. Zapatista commander Miriam.
Nosotros estamos aquí para luchar y enfrente en alto. No tenemos vergüenza de nada.
We're here to fight with our heads held high. We have nothing to be ashamed of because we're doing nothing more than fighting for our rights. But Fox is a traitor who doesn't even know how to resolve the demand of the people, but sends in repression instead. We don't want a murderous government anymore. We want Ulysses Ruiz to leave. Why does he stay there when the people say that they no longer want him?
Zapatista-based communities blockaded roads and highways throughout the neighboring state of Chiapas yesterday, and plans are in the works for a national strike on November 20th. For FSRN, I'm Shannon Young with Vladimir Flores in Oaxaca City.
Inspector generals at two different agencies have opened investigations into the silencing of government scientists on global warming. As Washington editor Leanne Caldwell reports, the suppression of information in the Bush administration is nothing new, according to public interest groups.
After increasing pressure from members of Congress, investigations into the government's suppression of science have been announced. In September, Senator Lautenberg, Democrat from New Jersey, wrote a letter to the Inspectors General of the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, and also the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA. The letter, signed by 13 fellow senators, cites a recent report withheld by NOAA that shows a link between global warming and last year's devastating hurricane season. The letter also cites that a politically appointed NOAA spokesperson prohibited a staff scientist, Thomas Knutson, from speaking about the effect global warming could have had on Hurricanes Wilma, Rita, and Katrina's magnitude. And ranking member of the House Government Reform Committee, Henry Waxman from California, posted to his website emails that detail the exchange between the NOAA spokesperson and a fellow colleague that denied media access to Knutson. And over at NASA, scientist Jim Henson, director of the Goddard Institute of Space Studies, claimed that he was silenced because of the scientific research he's done on global warming. Senator Lautenberg wrote in a statement, quote, "The Inspector General investigations are going to shake up the administration because it will uncover internal documents and agency correspondence that may expose widespread misconduct." Brendan Bell is global warming spokesperson for the Sierra Club.
The first time it got into office, the Bush administration has really tried to push the science on global warming underground. And even when it gets reports from its own scientists that we do need to respond to climate change, it's ignored them. So I think it is good that there is some oversight happening at the two agencies, but really the problem is at the top because the Bush administration has its head in the sand on global warming.
NASA and NOAA are not the only two agencies alleged to suppress scientific information, but also the Environmental Protection Agency. Brendan Bell calls it censorship.
There's just been across the board a censorship of actual peer-reviewed science and a decrease in funding to actually go out and find out what do we need to do and what do we need to understand about the fact that our climate is changing.
For the first few years of his presidency, President Bush dismissed the notion of global warming as unfounded. He pulled the U.S. from the Kyoto Treaty, which works to decrease the amount of greenhouse gases, which many believe is a main contributor to global warming. But critics say the suppression of information that disputes the administration's views are not unique to global warming. David Becker is a staff attorney for People of the American Way. They filed a Freedom of Information Act request to find out why the Election Assistance Commission has been sitting on a report for several months that reveals there is no evidence that voter fraud is being committed by lying about identity, voting twice, or claiming the names of the deceased. That's despite claims by politicians who favor strict voter identification regulations.
Certainly when taxpayer money is going to fund studies that are important, you were talking about global warming, we're talking about the right to vote, and very, very important things, it's necessary for the government to take some serious account of the public's right to access this information that they, in fact, paid for.
And in another claim of information suppression, some Democrats are decrying the holding of a report by the Department of Agriculture on hunger. The USDA said they're going to release it mid-November after the elections. The annual report is often released in October. But Terry Tiber, spokesperson for the Department of Agriculture, says it's the Democrats who are playing election year politics.
There was absolutely no political pressure to delay this report. This was an agency decision. The agency head will tell you that.
As for the investigation into the climate change cover-up, the results are expected to be released early next year. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Israeli leadership is calling a letter from President Bush historic. Sent on Tuesday, the written statement is the first time the U.S. government has fully recognized Israeli settlements on Palestinian land as a legitimate part of Israel. It also denied Palestinian refugees their internationally recognized right to return to their homes. The letter arrived just before Israel approved its largest war budget ever today. FSRN's Jenka Soderberg reports from Jerusalem.
Outgoing Israeli ambassador to the U.S., Daniel Ayalon, announced Tuesday the letter from George W. Bush in which the U.S. government has taken an unprecedented position that violates all previous agreements with the Palestinians in favor of unilateral land takeovers by Israel of large swaths of Palestinian land. Ayalon stated that he believes the letter is of equal import to the Balfour Declaration, the 1917 British declaration that first called for a Jewish state on the land of Palestine, though the Jewish state wasn't actually created until a 1948 United Nations resolution. Members of the Israeli leadership say they're pleased with this open U.S. recognition of their claim to land seized by force from a neighboring territory. Israeli human rights activists and parliamentarians from the Israeli left are outraged and dismayed at the letter, which they say violates all international norms and undermines any possible peace talks. Uri Avneri, founder of Gush Shalom, the Israeli peace bloc.
Well, it is leading to a new Middle East, but a Middle East which will be much worse for the United States and for Israel. So if this is a new Middle East which Mr. Bush and Mr. Olmert had in mind, doesn't seem to be a very beautiful picture.
Bush's sweeping dismissal of international norms and regulations comes just as the Israeli government has itself taken a dramatic turn to the right, with the swearing-in of Avigdor Lieberman, best known for his frequent public calls for the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people, as Minister of Strategic Affairs. This is a newly created position, initiated as part of a restructuring of the Israeli government called for by Lieberman. The restructuring puts increased power into the hands of the executive branch. Jonathan Cook, a political analyst in Israel.
80% of Palestinians living within what became the borders of Israel were ethnically cleansed during that war in 1948. So ethnic cleansing is not a new idea in Israeli politics. I mean, it's a very mainstream idea, and it's something that's been pursued right from the very beginning. For many years, Israeli politicians have been reluctant to talk openly about ethnic cleansing as a policy. But there's lots of evidence to suggest that ethnic cleansing has been pursued in limited forms ever since. But with Lieberman, what you're talking about really is wholesale ethnic cleansing. That's Lieberman's policy. And Olmert seems to be giving some kind of legitimacy to that policy now. And that, I would say, is an open declaration of war against the Palestinians.
And today, the Israeli parliament voted to approve a $12 billion war budget, the largest in Israeli history, after listening to talks by military commanders who told the parliament that Israel needs to be prepared for possible costly wars with Syria or Iran in the coming year. Mosi Raz, former Israeli parliamentarian.
The Israeli government policy is very extreme, very hawkish. That is refusing to negotiate with the Palestinians. This government went to a very, very stupid war in Lebanon and initiate very aggressive operations against the Palestinians in Gaza. They get the international support. Yes, they get the support.
Israeli forces appear to already be taking advantage of this new mandate, with the launch of a new offensive into the Gaza Strip that has left 13 Palestinians dead since yesterday. For FSRN, this is Jenka Soderberg reporting from Jerusalem.
Guatemala and Venezuela, the two Latin American countries vying for a seat on the United Nations Security Council, gave way to a compromise candidate after 47 rounds of voting. The foreign ministers of both nations nominated Panama as the consensus candidate to occupy the non-permanent seat. FSRN's Jorge Garretón has reaction from Santiago, Chile.
After a long drawn-out fight, Panama emerged as a compromise candidate to occupy the second regional seat at the UN Security Council. Chile initially let it be known that it would support Venezuela's option to take the seat because it is a regional partner and had the support of its Mercosur allies. But throughout the 47 rounds of voting, Chile remained neutral because a vote for Venezuela would polarize the ruling center-left coalition with factions that supported and opposed Venezuela's candidacy. In fact, there were threats of a breakup of Chile's successful ruling center-left coalition if Chile supported Venezuela. Chile's foreign minister, Alejandro Foxley, says Chile will support Panama's candidacy as soon as it emerges as the official regional candidate to occupy the region's second seat at the UN Security Council.
We believe Panama will be a very good representative of all of Latin America in the Security Council. The decision solves a dispute, a polarization, a division in the region. It justifies the decision taken by President Bachelet to abstain. Because no one had a majority and it was a troublesome vote, Panama can represent all of us well and with dignity.
This morning, Foreign Minister Foxley said President Michelle Bachelet was pleased with the Panama Compromise when given the news last night. There were other potential compromise candidates, but as analyst Armin Kojumjan says, all had a but.
Uruguay is considered a pretty neutral country normally, but of course now as there's a major row with Argentina on border environmental issues, that may have played against it. Paraguay's name was also mentioned, but Paraguay, of course, is the seat of a very secretive U.S. military installation about which the neighboring countries are not very happy. So a bit by elimination, Panama doesn't appear currently to have problems with anybody.
All that is left to put an end to this stare down between the U.S.-supported candidate Guatemala and the U.S. thorn in the region, Venezuela, is for the region's ambassadors at the United Nations to officially nominate Panama as the compromise candidate to occupy the UN Security Council seat. For FSRN, this is Jorge Garretón in Santiago.
People throughout the Americas, and in Mexico in particular, celebrate Día de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead, today. A sacred day when the souls of the dead return to this world to visit the loved ones they left behind. Immigration advocates are taking this time to remember the thousands of migrants that have lost their lives at the border and worry about the possible consequences of tighter security measures. FSRN's Alonso Rivera reports from the Tijuana border.
Like every Day of the Dead since 1994, the year that Operation Gatekeeper tightened border security and diverted migrants to remote and dangerous areas, human rights defenders and immigration advocates hang crosses on the border fence as a way of honoring the men, women, and children who lost their lives in their pursuit of the American dream. Last weekend, artists and activists from San Diego and Tijuana placed a large paper skull on the border fence with the names of more than 4,000 migrants who have died while trying to cross the border illegally since Operation Gatekeeper began. Claudia Smith from the California Rural Legal Assistance Foundation is one of those activists.
Every year we ask ourselves how many more migrants will we have to honor next year, and every year there are hundreds more. This year, there were more than 400.
12 years have passed, and now migrants face a new danger, because last week President Bush signed the Secure Fence Act, a law that authorizes the construction of 700 miles of additional fencing along the U.S.-Mexico border. For Claudia Smith, the new border fence will only result in more dead migrants.
The strategy consists of constantly pushing migrants away from populated areas, so it's harder for them to cross the border. So migrants will take even more terrible routes, where the possibility of being rescued are absolutely minimal. But migrants will keep trying to cross, even if it's under, over, or around those walls.
However, some social activists, like Dolores Huerta, co-founder of the United Farm Workers of America, believe the new wall will never be built because the funds have been authorized but have not yet been approved. Huerta added that one of the main detonators of migration is the exterior policies between the United States and Latin American countries.
The foreign policies we have with Mexico or Latin America are policies of economic colonization. We help other countries develop their economy. But for Mexico or Latin America, the policy is to take away their profits, their resources, and let people work for wages that they barely get by with.
With rising poverty levels in Mexico and a growing demand for inexpensive labor in the U.S., migrant rights defenders like Father Luis Kensierski, head of a migrant shelter in Tijuana, believe that building fences will not put an end to undocumented immigration.
Migration is necessary for Mexico and for the United States. So what we see is that this will not necessarily stop migration. It will only divert it to tougher routes and elevate the cost of crossing. The immigration problem cannot be solved with walls.
Joel Montaño, a 21-year-old migrant from the southern state of Veracruz, is living proof that fences and increased border security will not keep migrants from trying to cross into the U.S.
If you really have a dream and you are determined to accomplish it, it doesn't matter if they put up 10 or 15 walls, you will succeed.
Joel will try to cross the desert into the U.S. this Friday without the help of a guide, because he can't afford the $1,500 fee. And as he participates in this year's holiday celebration, he prays that his name won't appear in a cross or a skull in next year's Dia de los Muertos celebration. In Tijuana, this is Alonso Rivera for Free Speech Radio News.
Free Speech Radio News is a worker-run collective. Our newscast is produced by Simba Russo and Monica Lopez. Our Washington editor is Leanne Caldwell. Sandra Lupien was today's headlines editor. She's sitting in for Shannon Young. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Eric Klein and Antonio Ortiz. You can listen to this newscast in its entirety online at www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. We welcome your comments, questions, and story ideas. Just email us at comments@fsrn.org. From Pacifica Station, KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Abogado.